Hi, boys and girls. Like you, Santa is listening to the Merry Little Podcast of MyMerryChristmas.com.
Hello, Merry Christmas, and welcome to the Merry Little Podcast of MyMerryChristmas.com. We are the Internet's largest Christmas website and the world's greatest Christmas community, if I say so myself. My name is Jeff Westover, head of the Ebenezer Scrooge Fan Club at the Merry Forums of My Merry Christmas, where we are getting ready to enter our 30th year of celebrating Christmas together online. This episode of the Merry Little Podcast is sponsored by the Christmas Hall of Fame. 2020 marks the introduction of the Christmas Hall of Fame, and you can contribute by voting for inductees in this year's class and by nominating your favorites for induction in the years ahead of the Christmas Hall of Fame. Make sure your vote is heard and counted by participating for free at ChristmasHallOfFame.net. Included in the inaugural class of the Christmas Hall of Fame is a fictional character, the character of Ebenezer Scrooge, a name so well known that I don't have to explain to anyone who he is. The mere mention of his name conjures up a variety of images, both good and bad, and now, more than 170 years after his creation, we may even picture actual faces, hear actual voices, or perhaps even quote actual lines that are attributed to him. And that's a powerful statement for a character who isn't even real. And that's just one reason why he is the topic of this episode of the Merry Little Podcast. But before we dig in there, let's kick things off with a musical mood setting, our first new Christmas music of the 2020 season, and it's brought to us by the talented and always Christmas-ready Jim Brickman, who has a new release coming out called Soothe Christmas Volume 6. Now, we have been big fans of Mr. Brickman for decades, it seems, at My Merry Christmas and on Kringle Radio, so we're thrilled and grateful to have this new song from his new album called Winter Waltz.
Thank you.
Jim Brickman's new album drops on the 16th of October 2020 and can be previewed and purchased at jimbrickman.com. And stay tuned for another song of Christmas 2020, brand new, to be shared later in this episode. It has, for many decades now, been a private little Christmas routine of mine to reread A Christmas Carol every year. I start usually right around Halloween. It is a ghost story, after all. And I complete the short little story by Thanksgiving, thoroughly entertained and completely prepared for Christmas after following this little annual ritual. That started for me many years ago, quite by accident, and totally against my better wishes at the time. It was a Christmas season, you see, that I spent while away at college. I was away from home and broke as could be. And this was long before the internet, and I had no television, no radio, and in my quest for Christmas spirit of any kind, I picked up a copy of A Christmas Carol at the school library. Like just about every 20-year-old since the beginning of time, my exposure to the story then was through television and movies. In our house, we watched the old Alistair Sim version of A Christmas Carol, as that was the most common one available on TV, and I do recall at some point, whether it was on TV or in a theater, seeing the musical version of Scrooge when it was released in 1970. But that was really the extent of what I knew about Dickens or Scrooge or the story at all. Once I got past reading the first few pages and getting into the dialogue of the Victorian era, I was surprised and awakened to the genius that is and was Charles Dickens. I was shocked to find such variety in the story. There was drama, of course there was horror, but also comedy in the form of sarcasm and irony. I found it to be very clever, surprising even, as I flipped through its pages. I didn't really even recognize at the time that the text then was about 140 years old. All of that was completely unexpected to me, and it so threw me off that I became thoroughly engrossed in it, and I couldn't put it down. I tore through it, in fact, not wanting the story to end. In fact, I enjoyed it so much that I couldn't wait to do it again. And I would tell you it doesn't get old, even though I know it well now. I read it with as much anticipation as ever, knowing full well what everyone in the story will say and how it will all end. And I fear this experience taints me a little compared to most when it comes to how I view Dickens, his story, and the central character of Ebenezer Scrooge. After all, many know them all best from the movies that they've seen, some of which they consider indispensable to their own Christmas rituals every passing season. Of Scrooge in particular, some only know him as Michael Caine portrayed him in The Muppet Christmas Carol. Some can only consider him as interpreted by Patrick Stewart in the 1990s, or George C. Scott in the 1980s, or even Alistair Sim back in the 1950s. For as much as I've enjoyed each of these adaptations, I have to confess that Scrooge is, for me, most vivid in the theater of my mind, where he is directed by Charles Dickens, and where, especially, his craven aspects are deeper, darker, and more connective to his eventual redemption. I find contrasts in Scrooge that get little mention from the historians who try to craft history, and their telling of his creation are from literary experts who pull Dickens apart in critical detail. I find little use for them, frankly. I'm just too intimate with the text now, too invested to buy the theories of historians and academics. For example, we're introduced to Scrooge first, both in the book and in most movies, by seeing him through the eyes of the public. And it's not a pretty picture. He's mean, he's rude, he's heartless, and he's cruel. He's a humbug, to quote Scrooge himself. But then we see him alone in his chamber at home, and a more personal side of Scrooge is revealed. He gets scared, he gets annoyed, and then as the apparition of Marley enters into the chamber and into the story, we see more of the human side of Scrooge. Jacob Marley is his friend. Scrooge is complimentary of him, even sympathetic. Here Marley terrorizes him, and yet Marley explains the woes of wearing his chain, and Scrooge pities him and offers to help. Just who is this character of Ebenezer Scrooge? Clearly, as the story unfolds, there is more to him than merely being a miser, a skinflint, or a, quote, tight-fisted, nose-to-the-grindstone old sinner, as he is so labeled. Scrooge reminds me very much of the real-life story of the writer of the hymn, Come Thou Fount of Every Blessing, Robert Robinson, another long-ago creation that holds a seasonal minute in my heart every year. That story is powerful because the writer of that song was bitter and disconnected, just like Scrooge. But like Scrooge, it was not always so with Robinson. He was the man who wrote the inspiring words of that worshipful song with lyrics that literally pierced the soul. And he was not always the harsh and mean man some would later consider him to be. Quote, prone to wander, Lord, I feel it, prone to leave the God I love, unquote. Those are words with which we can all identify with. Words made more powerful by the fact that Robinson, long after the hymn was written and famous, had wandered again for a long time before finding redemption in his own words later on in life. Scrooge, a man of fiction, and Robinson, a real person, are endearing to us because we are, at the end of the day, just like both of them. Imperfect, stubborn, blind, cold, heartless, maybe even cruel at times. And we don't mean it. We don't want to be like that. We want in our hearts to have a way out from that. And that's what we learn from Scrooge and what Scrooge learns about himself. This is why Dickens is so endearing to us as a creator. He wasn't the greatest writer in the world, as scholars love to huff and puff about. He reached out with the story and touches us still with what he observed in human nature. What was true then is true now. Scrooge wasn't a great figure because he was different. He's a great character because we can relate. 170 years now, we're still relating to him. It is indeed easy for us to say, Lord, I feel it.
When a cold wind blows, it chills you to the bone.
But there's nothing in nature that freezes your heart like years of being alone.
It paints you with indifference like a lady paints with rouge.
And the worst of the worst,
the most hated and cursed,
is the one that we call Scrooge.
Unkind as any,
and the wrath of many,
this is Ebenezer Scrooge.
Oh, there goes Mr. Humbug, there goes Mr. Grimm. If they gave a prize for being mean, the winner would be him.
Old Scrooge, he loves his money, 'cause he thinks it gives him power.
If he became a flavor, you can bet he would be sour.
Even the vegetables don't like him.
It has become a pastime of 21st century second-guessers to suppose Dickens had someone in mind when he created the character of Scrooge. That supposition leads to a lot of really bad history, and Dickens, as we have said before, is perhaps one of the most abused historical figures of the 19th century. The most popular theory resides with a real person well known in British history for both his wealth and his eccentric, miserly proclivities. His name was John Elwes. The most important thing to remember about Elwes was that he predated Dickens by nearly a century and died some 20 years or so before Dickens was born. Historians suppose that he was an influence on Dickens simply because he was British and he was famous. Elwes was very rich and miserly in the extreme. He was known to eat food that was spoiled so as not to waste it, and even to yell at horses and other livestock let loose in his fields so they wouldn't eat his hay. On cold mornings, he kept warm by pacing back and forth in the great hall of his drafty mansion, rather than waste wood in a fireplace. Too cheap to marry, he lived like a hermit for more than 50 years to, quote, avoid the expense of company, unquote. He refused to buy a carriage and wondered how anyone could think he could afford one. Riding a horse was cheaper, especially the way he did it. Before setting off on a journey, he'd fill his pockets with hard-boiled eggs so that he wouldn't have to pay for meals in taverns. He rode in the soft dirt by the side of the road rather than the road itself so that he wouldn't have to buy horseshoes for his horses. He traveled hours out of his way to avoid toll roads. If he needed to stop for the night, he'd find a spot by the side of the road that had a lot of grass so that the horse could eat for free, and so that he could sleep beneath the tree to save the price of a room at the inn. But these things were not the real reason why John Elwes was famous. His fame came from his wealth, which was inherited. and from the fact that he served in Parliament, as many rich Englishmen did in the 18th century. The stories of his miserly ways were perhaps embellishments by histories, ironically, and his fame far outlived him. It was not uncommon for the generation that produced Dickens to know the name of John Elwes, but historians could never confirm that Elwes was really the inspiration for Dickens' most famous character. They just assume it for some reason. My problem with this assumption from historians comes from the fact that Dickens was not only known for creating characters in his fiction from real individuals he knew and met, but also from the fact that Dickens was very open about the inspiration for his characters. Now, Dickens was a 19th century media superstar, even though he didn't know it at the time, and nobody else did either. He was interviewed constantly and quoted frequently. Perhaps the most common questions he had to answer dealt with his inspirations for his characters. And the truth is that Dickens never said there was an inspiration for Scrooge. And that's why I dismiss these wild 21st century theories floating around YouTube and in the books of academia about Dickens and his so-called history. My opinion, and it's just that, is that if Dickens didn't say who inspired Scrooge, then there wasn't one person who was his model. There are several rabbit holes that historians go down in trying to flesh this out. Everyone from Elwes to Dickens' own father are suspects. But none of these theories pan out, in my view. I think if we have to peg it on anything, we should consider the times that inspired almost all of Dickens' works of fiction. He was a social warrior, himself a victim of child labor abuses in the early 19th century. And my guess is that the character of Scrooge was likely a composite of several individuals in the real life of Charles Dickens, and perhaps even the inspiration was Dickens himself. Besides, why would Dickens even disclose who the real Scrooge was? Ebenezer Scrooge was the protagonist of the story. Scrooge is necessarily cruel, necessarily craven, necessarily bitter. If he's not, then his redemption would not be joyous for either for him or for us. But why would Dickens want to stick those labels on anybody? No wonder he never said who it was, and we're wrong to go there ourselves. It's not fair to Dickens, and at the end of the day, it's not fair to someone like John Elwes.
Of all the days in all the year that I'm familiar with, there's only one that's rarely fun.
December the 20th.
Correct.
Ask anyone, call Robinson or Brown or Jones or Smith, their favorite day, and they will say,
December the 25th.
Correct.
December the 25th.
What is
December the 25th? The dearest day in all the year. December the 25th.
Correct.
The staying power of A Christmas Carol is unprecedented. Of all the creators of the time, from Longfellow to Poe, none has the longevity of Charles Dickens or of A Christmas Carol. To this day, Christmas, in fact, in celebration, just cannot happen without A Christmas Carol. It was a sensation from day one. Within a year, A Christmas Carol was adapted for the stage in London, and within a couple of years, it appeared in New York. The book went through several printings, but as was custom of the time, the story itself would appear in newspapers for free as a matter of tradition, and this went on for decades. Many seem to think it was only a seasonal Christmastime thing, yet Dickens himself would hold readings on stages in both the UK and the USA during all months of the year. In fact, he was just as famous for his acting skills as he was as a writer. In the 1850s and 60s, especially, Dickens loved to put the characters he created and act them out himself. The reviews of his performances were simply exceptional. From a Buffalo, New York review in 1857, this was said, quote, 8 o'clock precisely, a well-dressed gentleman with a geranium in his buttonhole and his hair carefully brushed forward to conceal as much as possible his incipient baldness, appeared alone on the platform, and I knew by the vehement applause it could be none other than the immortal author of the Pickwick Papers. It's not so much reading as it is acting. The thin voice of Tiny Tim, the chirpy notes of Bob Cratchit, the indignant voice of Cratchit's wife, and above all, the sullen, mumbling tone of Scrooge himself were rendered perfectly, although the reader occupied more than 2 hours, the reader showed no signs of weariness, but seemed to enjoy the entertainment as much as his most attentive audience, unquote. More than a decade later, in 1867, Dickens was still at it and still getting rave reviews. Quote, "The asthmatic, querulous tones of old Scrooge I shall never forget, nor the striking contrast presented between him and his nephew, who made himself ridiculous in Scrooge's eyes by falling in love and getting married. During the never-to-be-forgotten hour and a half, we were led, as if by enchantment, through all the wonderful scenes by which Scrooge was taught that mankind was his business. The voice ceased at last, and Dickens sat down. A minute or more of total silence followed before the spell he weaved could be broken. And then, when we found ourselves back in St. Martin's Hall again, and saw that Dickens was on the eve of retiring, a deep, full-tone shout of admiration arose from every part of the hall, and I never saw more intense enthusiasm," unquote. Well, by this time in history, A Christmas Carol was already known to just about everyone everywhere, yet people never seemed to tire of it or to raise a word of criticism about it. Not only was the story repeated in print, it was performed in theaters large and small throughout the 19th and 20th centuries, with local actors becoming beloved icons as they perfected playing the part of Scrooge specifically over many, many years. When Dickens died in 1870, it seemed that the popularity of A Christmas Carol doubled overnight. Scrooge was a name held in derision as well as in praise. Politicians, local businessmen, and even clergy were spoken of in comparison to Scrooge, both his good and his bad qualities. Scrooge became an adjective, a noun, and a verb, much like Google has in our time, instantly recognizable in whatever context that the name was used.
I hate people. I hate people. People are despicable creatures, loathsome, inexplicable creatures, good for nothing, kickable creatures. I hate people. I abhor them. When I see the indolent classes sitting on their indolent asses, gulping ale from indolent glasses, I hate people. I detest them. I deplore them.
It's not much of my tradition here on the Merry Little Podcast to review films. That's work that we leave to other Christmas podcasters out there. But in this case, we're going to make a slight exception as we roll through some of the many recorded versions of A Christmas Carol. Too much of the focus, I feel, comes from critics who drill down to the ghosts of Christmas, past, present, and future. But for as important as each of those characters are to the story, there is really none more important, in my view, than Jacob Marley. Nothing is more terrifying than that very first ghostly encounter. Scrooge was shocked by it, and we're shocked by it. It can be a common nightmare, the spirits of the dead coming back to haunt us. Interestingly, Scrooge hints that this is perhaps one of his spiritual gifts, that he sees them all the time. He asks Marley, "Why do spirits visit me?" This is a curious theme, if only because in the 1840s, this brand of spiritualism was very popular, and there was a lot of curiosity about it. It is, for the purposes of this story, a window that has been cracked into the fascinating character of Ebenezer Scrooge. This scene is also one of the most difficult of all written dramatic scenes to perform. It's like listening to the national anthem. This scene separates the good from the great in terms of acting. Either you can do it or you can't. It lays the foundation for the entire story. Marley promises Scrooge a way out, but he has to meet the three ghosts of Christmas. In so doing, Marley shows Scrooge, in no uncertain terms, just what the fate is that awaits him. The scene is as critical to us as it is to Scrooge as the story unfolds. So we're going to use this scene in our evaluation of some of the film adaptations of A Christmas Carol. In my view, if they cannot pull off the exchange between Scrooge and Marley, well, the rest of the film probably doesn't have much going for it. In an interesting switch, the words of Dickens were displayed on film in no less than four different silent movie versions of Scrooge and his story before the 1930s. Most famously, Seymour Hicks, who first portrayed Scrooge in the 1913 silent film, also starred in the first major motion picture release of the story in 1935.
To warn! To save me! From what?
From such a fate as mine, to wander through the world and witness what I cannot share, but might have shared on Earth, and turn to happiness.
But you were always a good man of business, Jacob. Business!
Mankind should have been my business. Charity, forbearance, benevolence, all were my business, as they should be yours.
One constant criticism of Hicks' 1935 performance is his age. He was 64 years old in 1935, and he looked it, as Scrooge played opposite his fiancée, Belle, who obviously was decades younger than him, giving this version a creep-out factor that has turned off later generations of Christmas Carol fans. The 1935 version is hailed as a classic by some, but I fear it is more because it was made in 1935 and not because it was actually any good. The story was again made in motion picture just a few years later in 1938 with Reginald Owen as Scrooge. That production was based on a popular radio version of A Christmas Carol starring Lionel Barrymore, the famous Mr. Potter of It's a Wonderful Life. However, Barrymore was incapacitated by arthritis, and he was the one that suggested Owen as the right person for Scrooge.
In life, I was your partner, Jacob Marley.
Well? What do you want?
Much. You don't believe in me.
I don't.
What proof would you have of my reality beyond that of your own senses?
I don't know.
Why do you doubt your senses?
Because a little thing affects them. A slight disorder of the stomach makes them liars.
This version is better, but this time around there are things missing in the story. There are no phantoms wandering hither and thither outside Scrooge's window. His doomed romance with his fiancée, Belle, is doomed to have never happened. The wretched, frightful, hideous children of want and ignorance are nowhere to be seen, let alone cowering within the folds of the robes of Christmas present. And the thieves who ransack Scrooge's room after his demise and Christmas yet to come, well, they're conspicuous by their absence. In all, this is a soft-hearted version of A Christmas Carol that lacks depth and leaves many true fans of Dickens really disappointed because of everything that it left out. In 1949, another film version was released with Vincent Price as the narrator and Taylor Holmes as Scrooge. Vincent Price telling a ghost story? Well, what could possibly go wrong? Well, evidently a great deal, considering this is the least remembered of all versions of A Christmas Carol. Price looks pretty ridiculous in a bow tie and a beard, and really out of place in a Victorian children's nursery. Plus, it's hard to tell if Price is narrating or acting in his role, and it's just confusing to follow.
Scrooge lived in the chambers which had once belonged to Marley, his ex-partner. And as I have remarked before, Marley is dead these last 7 years. Dead as a doornail.
Oh, no! What do you want of me?
Much.
Who are you?
Life, I was your partner, Jacob Marley. You don't believe in me?
I don't.
The rest of the cast, including Holmes, give hammy performances they seem almost embarrassed by, and for good reason. They're really bad. In 1951, another version was released, a gold standard, you could say, the Alistair Sim version that seemed to bring A Christmas Carol back to its roots.
You don't believe in me?
I don't.
Why do you doubt your senses?
Because a little thing affects them. A slight disorder of the stomach makes them cheat. You might be an undigested bit of beef. A piece of cheese. A fragment of an underdone potato. There's more of gravy than of grave in you.
In this version, Sim gives a performance that others are still compared to. There are some oddities in this film that go unexplained. Nephew Fred's mother suddenly died in giving birth to him, a fact that never happened in Dickens' story. The film also suggests that this tidbit gives Scrooge and Fred something in common because it is implied that Scrooge is resented and rejected by his own father because Scrooge's mother died in giving birth to him. Convoluted and inexplicable as all of that is, Scrooge's fiancée goes by the name of Alice instead of Belle in this story, something that is never explained in the movie. Still, overall, it's a first-rate 1950s black-and-white production, one worthy of rewatching every year, as many people still do. Over the course of several years thereafter, A Christmas Carol seemed to wallow in television specials. Then, in 1970, at the end of a great era of Hollywood musical making, the idea was cast to make a musical version of A Christmas Carol, the first major motion picture release of the story in decades. Cast as Scrooge was Albert Finney, though at this time of his career he was still in his 30s. Joining him as Jacob Marley was none other than Alex Guinness. That's right, boys and girls. Obi-Wan Kenobi was Jacob Marley.
I wear the chain I forged in life. I made it link by link and yard by yard while on earth. And now I can never be rid of it any more than you will ever be rid of yours.
Mine?
It was as heavy and long as this 7 Christmases ago. It's a terrible, ponderous chain you are making, Scrooge.
Tell me more, Marley, but speak comfort to me.
I have none to give.
None?
Comfort comes from other sources, Ebenezer Scrooge, and is given by other ministers than I. To other kinds of men than you.
Now, there's a lot of odd in this version of A Christmas Carol 2. In an attempt to stay close to the original story, the filmmakers did not shy away from the hard stuff. In fact, they sent Scrooge to hell and made him Lucifer's clerk in what was really a controversial and strange segment. But what makes this story work overall is that visually it was close to what we all picture old Victorian England to look like. And there were a few great musical sequences, just as this scene where the crowd cheers the passing of Scrooge, while Scrooge himself misinterprets their meaning.
May I say, in all humility,
hooray!
I have labored unceasingly all my life,
hooray!
To be worthy of this moving demonstration of your feelings towards me.
Hooray! Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of all the people who have assembled here, I would merely like to mention, if I may, that our unanimous attitude is one of lasting gratitude for what our friend has done for us tonight. And therefore, I would simply like to say, thank you very much. Thank you very much. That's the nicest thing that anyone's ever done for me. I make a double dutch, but my delight is such, I feel as if a losing war's been won for me. And if I had a flag, I'd hang me flag out to add a sort of final victory touch. But since I left me flag at home, I'll simply have to say, thank you very, very, very much.
The 1980s brought two notable Christmas Carol productions, one made for TV and one presented inexplicably as a dark comedy. The television production from 1984 is today considered one of the Christmas Carol gold standards, and it starred George C. Scott as Scrooge. Well, I can remember thinking at the time and hearing about it, how in the world do they get General Patton to say Bah Humbug? Credits at the time were a little taken aback by Scott as well. After all, this was a British production, with George C. Scott not even trying to put on a British accent. What made it work is that everyone, from the director to Scott himself and ultimately all of us as viewers, well, we simply overlooked the accent and allowed Scott to act out all the motions of Scrooge in his native dialect, which he did masterfully. It helped that he had great supporting actors such as Frank Finlay, who played Jacob Marley.
Is there anything I can do for you? For me? Nay, it is too late. But I have come for your sake, Ebenezer.
Have you?
Well, you always were a good friend.
As part of my penance, I have been sent to warn you.
And so you have?
And to offer you a hope and chance of escaping my fate. You will be haunted by three spirits.
Three spirits?
Is that the chance and hope you mentioned?
It is.
Well, in that case, I think I'd rather not.
Expect the first tonight when the bell tolls one.
It is hard after seeing that version to endure what came next. A Richard Donner dark comedy called Scrooged, with Bill Murray playing Frank Cross, the Scrooge-like television executive whose Marley moment came with his former boss Lou, played deliciously by John Forsythe, complete with a bird coming out of the back of his rotten head.
Frank, you are in trouble. Big trouble.
All right. Let's just say, for argument's sake, that you're right, that I am in big trouble. What exactly would that mean?
Look at me. Look at your future. Now, if you don't change your ways, you're going to wind up doomed, just as I am. 1 minute. I'm on the 14th hole at Wingfoot, lining up a putt. A heart attack later, I'm a worm feast.
No, 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 no. You're not a worm feast. You're a hallucination brought on by alcohol, Russian vodka poisoned by Chernobyl.
That film opened to mixed reviews, with Roger Ebert calling it one of the most disquieting, unsettling films to come along in quite some time, saying that it portrays pain and anger more than comedy. Well, I call that an understatement, and I know that there aren't many out there who agree with me. The film is, to me, an offense to everything that Dickens wrote and intended. While the film bombed overall when it came out, it has gone on to cult classic status through regular reissue on DVD and Blu-ray and repeated performances on streaming devices. It was just a few years later when comedy of a different sort was tried with The Muppets, of all people, and they stepped in with Michael Caine as Scrooge. The film is a Muppet comedy and a musical, both recipes for disaster, right? Well, check that. The Muppet Christmas Carol, kids, is actually Dickens worthy.
A nightmare waits for you.
What are these terrible chains?
The chains! We forge these chains in life by our acts of greed.
You wear such a chain yourself.
Humbug, speak comfort to me, friends.
Comfort!
You will be haunted by three spirits.
Haunted?
What makes the Muppet version so magical is that the Muppets already know how to tell a story. Yes, they watered down a few parts here and there to make it not quite so dark for the kids, and the added little Muppet elements that gave it just the right level of humor, including the part where Beaker flips Scrooge the bird. I kid you not. Google it or catch our story about that on our website. The Muppet Christmas Carol is an annual replay kind of movie that goes in most homes these days, and rightfully so. In the late 1990s, another attempt was made at a serious film version of A Christmas Carol, this time starring Patrick Stewart as Scrooge, who played him many times previously on stage. Sir Patrick Stewart, Captain Picard, British acting legend. What could possibly go wrong, right?
Jacob Marley, speak comfort to me, Jacob.
I have none to give. I cannot rest. I cannot stay. I cannot linger anywhere. Oh, never to be able to make amends for missed opportunities. Oh, the torture of remorse.
Jacob, I don't understand why you're suffering. All your life, you were a good businessman.
That's why I'm suffering. The suffering I caused others is being repaid.
Jacob, it was business!
Now, this is a very popular version of A Christmas Carol, and I hate to spoil the party, but the entire problem with this version is Patrick Stewart. His Scrooge is rather temperate. He is neither quite mean enough, and when it comes to his survival of the Ghosts of Christmas, his joy is as put on as, well, Bill Murray playing Scrooge, and it's very uncomfortable. I know I'm not in the majority on this opinion. I apologize only because I really, really like Stewart and other roles that he played, X-Men, whatever. But for me, especially being as British as he is, his Scrooge was kind of flat. What's great about A Christmas Carol is that it endures all the weird interpretations out there, and there are many that I'm not including here, including last year's weird BBC adaptation that dropped the F-bomb every few minutes. Dickens must roll over in his grave from time to time to see what has been done to his story, but his words, written as he wrote them, endure, and they are available to us. I would challenge you in this COVID year of 2020 to break away from whatever your routine is with Dickens and Scrooge and put down the remote. Instead, pick up the book or your device and invest in reading actual Dickens, telling the story of A Christmas Carol. Let's close out this episode with another new Christmas song from 2020, this one from Luke McMaster called Christmas Present by his new album of the same name dropping on the 16th of October 2020.
Would it still be Christmas if we couldn't be together? I just assumed you'd be here. It's been a hell of a year. Nothing lasts forever, and there's nothing better than the moments we share. Yeah. I'll never wish away another winter, baby. This year I'm gonna love the cold. We'll never get another gift that's this amazing. This is our Christmas present. Oh yeah, Christmas present. I used to be so hung up on the things I didn't have, making a list that never ends. That we're here with our family and friends, I'll never take this for granted again. I'll never wish away another winter, baby. This year I'm gonna love the cold. That's this amazing. Right here, right now, this is our Christmas present.
His name is Luke McMaster, and his album is titled Christmas Present. You can learn more about him at lukemcmaster.com, and you'll be able to hear his new Christmas stuff on Kringle Radio this season. Join us at the merry forums of mymerrychristmas.com, where we share the new music of Christmas, and we discuss the many versions of A Christmas Carol and the history behind it. For all of us at mymerrychristmas.com, this is Jeff Westover wishing you and yours a very Merry Christmas.